This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome back to Market Talk, where we aim to give you a brief rundown of what happened in markets last week, what's front of mind, and what's on the financial horizon. Hosting the call is me, Francis Watson, content manager, and giving us the benefit of his expert views, Ben Bennett, head of investment strategy and research, and who joins me from Hong Kong. Ben, hello to you.
Hi, Francis. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. And thanks for asking. I'm probably better than some of the CEOs who have to announce their results at the moment because they are a fairly generic trend of deteriorating outlooks, I think. I mean, just on that, Ben, should we kick off with the results statement that we got last week from the likes of, you know, the big US heavy retailers, Walmart and Target? Talk of margin compression there, but what does that actually mean for markets in terms of companies that are price takers?
Yes, you're right. We've actually had some good generic US data over the last couple of weeks, both in terms of retail sales and industrial production. On aggregate, I say the US is still pretty strong as an economy. But yeah, we've seen a couple of big retailers, Walmart and Target, announce profit warnings. And to do with that, it does feel as though they're struggling a little bit to pass on higher prices. We know inflation's going up, passing on high inflation, and that does mean some sort of margin compression. And they're not the first ones to do this. We heard a few weeks ago, didn't we, about Amazon, which is, you know, the biggest retailer in the world, in effect, also struggling a little bit. So it's an interesting dynamic between those nominal increases in retail sales doing fine in price terms, and actually some of the squeeze that you're getting in the companies. And as asset owners, you know, as share owners, we really care about profitability. I think looking forward, Q2 earnings season, which will be around, you know, in a few weeks' time, is going to be really important to hear more from CEOs, as you say, to try and find out the ones that are able to set price. It's going to get increasingly difficult because as prices go up, you know, you have to keep on pushing those price increases onto your consumers, and they don't generally like that, do they? So it's going to get increasingly difficult, and we're probably going to hear that in the Q2 earnings season.
And what about share price reactions? I mean, I know we've had some heavy falls, but generally when the announcement comes out, is it a lot of it in the price, or is it spooking investors a little bit?
Absolutely. It's been definitely on the spooking side. And, you know, this is the function of a bear market. We're in a bear market at the minute. I mean, it's been pretty atrocious all year in terms of some of the moves that we've seen in equity indices. And one of the things that you can see in bear markets is that when you get bad news, there's a disproportionate impact on share prices. Massive moves that we've seen from disappointing results season. And overall, this is just as of close on the 24th of May. We're recording on the 25th here, but on the 24th of May, you know, the S&P 500 this year is down 17%. The NASDAQ is down 28%. And we've seen a few disappointing technology results as well. So you can see that's feeding through. Absolutely. This is not the equity environment to be disappointing your investors.
Yeah. And you mentioned the bear market. And of course, a bear market territory is what, a 20% fall. And I think we briefly touched that last week, weren't you? But we're still hovering around it, aren't we, as you say. But over on the other side, though, Chinese equities seem to have stabilised a bit from heavy falls, admittedly. But what's going on there, Ben?
They were doing pretty badly. There's a bit of a bounce from the lows. But yeah, you know, I mentioned, you know, the NASDAQ was down 28% as of the 24th of May. The Hang Seng, which is a technology-dominated Chinese index, down 14% now. So doing a lot better than the NASDAQ, still not great, but doing a lot better. And some of this, like I say, is bouncing off the lows. But the other part is the hope or the rhetoric from Chinese policymakers is building. I've mentioned this a little, for a few times now, but there is really now support in terms of a interest rate cut for mortgages, 15 basis points, and also banks were able to offer mortgages below that interest rates as well. So it's a sort of 35 basis point, 0.35% decrease in mortgages, which is obviously going the other way in a lot of other countries like the UK, isn't it?
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not happening anytime soon, is it? And then also from a consumption point of view, lots of things, you know, helping to buy cars, helping to buy, getting vouchers and all that sort of stuff. It's not really feeding through in the data yet. We're going to still see some pretty bad Chinese growth data, I think, over the next few months. And a lot of banks are are cutting their growth forecasts as a result. But when and if they reopen from this latest COVID wave, that's probably the most important forward-looking thing I can talk about right now, is the Chinese ability to reopen from this COVID wave. As they reopen from that, you're going to see global supply chains reopen, which is great for global activity, and it's going to hopefully reduce inflation as well. And you're going to see a proper feed through of all these supportive measures. So that's what we're all clinging on to. That's the hope, and it is being reflected a little bit in equity share prices in the region.
I was going to say, where are we in terms of Chinese growth now, Ben, on account of all the lockdowns?
So we still forecast 2022 GDP growth at 4.5%. Remember, the target for the Chinese authorities is 5.5%. We cut to 4.5% a little while ago, and that was quite an aggressive cut. But I've seen a lot of investment banks, sell-side investment banks, having cut below that now. I've seen even 4.0% growth. So it's still positive. It's still pretty good. But, you know, it's expected to undershoot the authorities' aim. And every day that there's lockdowns in place, you know, it's going to be harder and harder to achieve that, even after the 4.5% that we're hoping.
Absolutely. Should we go from China then to Europe? And European short-dated rates were up, as I understand it, on a change of sentiment from the European Central Bank. Just fill us in on the background to that.
Well, it's really been the Fed for a while, hasn't it? Increasing their hawkish rhetoric. And, you know, that's broadly priced in now. Funnily enough, US interest rates have started to decline a little bit on the concern about growth and some of the issues that I was talking about earlier with those retailers, etc. In Europe, a few of the ECB governors are now talking about the possibility of hiking rates by 50 basis points in their first rate hike, which is broadly expected to be in July. So 25 basis points hike was expected previously in July. That's baked into markets to some degree. But this possibility of a 50 basis point hike then did lead to yields going up at the short end, absolutely. And not just that, but the more hawkish sentiment from the ECB would also pressurize potentially peripheral type credit as well. So we've seen some weakness from Italian government bonds again, because they would be less supportive potentially if they're tightening policy. We know QE is almost certainly going to end in July and then quickly followed by a rate hike. You know, it does feel as though they're squeezing everything. So higher yields and slightly weaker peripheral credit as well. That's been the playbook.
So we've got European credit spreads widening at the same time as quite significant spread widening then in US high yield. Is that the same, you know, theory behind it all, monetary tightening? Is that why this is all happening?
Well, it's monetary tightening. I think the latest leg wider is growth. I mean, this is going back to what we were saying about maybe companies struggling to pass things on. Also in the US, starting to see housing data get a little bit worse, which again is understandable. You increase mortgage rates in the US as they have done so much, then fewer people are going to want to buy a house. So, and then the housing market is very important, of course, in the US. So it's all a little bit concerning that, you know, growth is forward-looking growth is going to be slowing down. It's still good right now, but it's going to be slowing down. And, you know, markets are trying to discount that. So we've seen wider spreads in investment-grade credit markets, as you said, high-yield credit markets as well. The other part of this, and this is very backward-looking, so this could all change, but we're talking about flows. Mutual fund flows have been very weak in investment-grade and high-yield markets this year. That's because spreads are widening with potential deterioration of credit quality, and also bond yields have been going up. So total returns have been very, very weak. Investors have been leaving the asset class, and that does weigh on spreads. That does weigh on yields. It's a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need some stabilization. We need to see investors have another look at some of these yields on offer. And they are. Very high now. I mean, US high yield index, this is the Bloomberg index, and taken again these yield levels from the 24th of May, is about 7.8% for US high yield.
Wow, that's racy, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's a lot higher than it has been. So,
I haven't heard that yield in a while.
Whether or not that's attractive enough, I don't know. And we'll see the flows. But, you know, at some point they turn, don't they?
Okay, so we're going to skirt over the agenda for this week because President Biden is in Asia. There's lots going on. The great and the good, I think, have just departed from Davos, haven't they? But there's nothing we want to terribly focus on. But what I do want to focus on, as always, is your number for the week, Ben. So what is it and why?
Well, I actually want to talk about the dollar a little bit because I think what's going on there is really interesting. So my number of the week is 6.1, and that's that the dollar is rallied under the DXY index, which is the dollar index, by 6.1%, again, by the 24th of May, which is big. You know, that a dollar rally like that is normally associated with a sort of risk off concerns, people returning back to the dollar, issues in emerging markets. We did a bit of a deep dive this week in terms of, you know, what has been driving this. And actually, it doesn't look as though it's some of those traditional factors that are driving that strength in the dollar. For us, it's probably more to do with the strength in commodities. Commodities are generally denominated in dollars. And if you import a lot of commodities, let's say Japan, you'll have to buy a lot of dollars and then buy your oil or buy whatever else it is that you're trying to buy. That purchasing of dollars, I think, is one of the big reasons why the dollar has been rallying and why potentially the yen or the euro has been weak. All these countries are importing. And that's why across emerging markets, it is more nuanced. If you are an exporter of commodities, you've actually done really well this year. If you've been able to sell, you've been able to get your dollars by selling your commodities. If you've been an importer, you've been under pressure. So I don't think it's generic, this weakness, this issue with the dollar. I think it's quite nuanced and you've got to start to think about it. The thing that's changed over the last few weeks because of the concern about growth, global growth, is that commodity prices have started to come down a bit. You know, we had that amazing run, haven't we, for months and months and months. They've started to come down because we are concerned about demand, of course. If economy is doing a little bit weaker, potentially you're going to see less demand for oil. And that fall in commodities is maybe also alleviating some pressure on the dollar. And actually, the dollar's about 3% off the actual highs that we got to a few weeks. Still up 6.1%, but it was up 9% not that long ago. So you can see some of that pressure alleviating already.
So we're seeing this a defined correlation then, do you think, between a commodity index and the fortunes of the dollar?
Yeah, that definitely feels a link in the way that we analyze it. I mean, it's so complicated. There's all sorts of stuff going on there. But I do think it's very important during this cycle, commodities. And if commodities can fall a bit, not good for global growth, but it might be okay, it might be better for volatility. A weaker dollar generally leads to slightly more recovery across other asset classes.
Okay, that's interesting. Of course, my number of the week is 2. Because next week, courtesy of Her Majesty, thank you, Mom, we're going to have not one, but 2 bank holidays off. So I expect some of our listeners will be having street parties. And you never know, you might get extra time to listen to our market talk. But in the meantime, Ben, thanks so much for all your analysis. And thank you all for listening. Thank you. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn and our website, elgim.com. Copyright 2021, Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.